You're listening to Feedback with Bill Saunders on News Talk 830 WEEU and 830WEEU.com. A new generation of talk.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Feedback, your on-air town square here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. And our phone numbers here, if you'd like to take part in the conversation, are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. And we also have a dedicated text line. That number is 484-650-3373. And our dedicated email line is feedback at 830WEEU.com. All right, let's get started. Take a look and see what today's top three topics are. Montgomery County's Register of Wills Office announces it's cleared millions in a backlog of unprocessed inheritance tax receipts. But questions remain unanswered as to the reasons for that backlog. Governor Shapiro has used the state's airplane far more than his predecessor. We'll highlight some of the trips he's taken on that plane, and recently released documents show how the Biden administration worked to censor social media platforms during the pandemic. All right, with that said, let's start with that Montgomery County story. Why not? I got this from the Inquirer this morning before I went on the air. They're reporting that Montgomery County Register of Wills, Tina Lawson, touted the successful clearing of a $100 million backlog in its inheritance taxes and returns in a news release last month, celebrating her first 100 days in office. But, according to the Inquirer, questions remain about how one of the wealthiest and most populous counties in the state developed such a large backlog, accounting for roughly 6 months of work based on past audits of the inheritance checks the county processes each year. Lawson couldn't explain how the issue developed, and her predecessor, who attributed processing delays in the office to staffing issues, accused her of exaggerating it. State officials confirm that Montgomery County has processed inheritance taxes slower than its counterparts in other counties, but the true scale of the issue is unclear, according to this Inquirer piece, as is how long the problem has persisted. Former staff members in the office say it was being consistently worked on even before Lawson took office. But once she took over in January, the county devoted new staff to solve the problem. "I don't know how it came to this. I have no idea," Lawson said in an interview last week, though she was careful to note she did not want to criticize former Register of Wills Bruce Haynes, who left office in January. He also endorsed her when she ran for the position last year. Both, by the way, are Democrats. A county register of wills is responsible for probate, marriage licenses, and inheritance tax filings. In all Pennsylvania counties, these offices deposit inheritance tax checks into a shared state bank account as they process them. And that function is where Montgomery County fell behind, according to the Inquirer. Registers of wills in Chester and Delaware counties said they had never encountered significant delays in their processing, though those counties handle a smaller number of checks annually. The State Department of Revenue confirmed last week that Montgomery County was processing returns slower than other counties, but did not respond to questions about how long the slow processing had been an issue. Kendra Martin, who is a spokesperson for the department, said to the Inquirer in an email, "We are hopeful that processing times in this county will improve moving forward." Well, three former employees of the Register of Wills office, who asked not to be named, told the Inquirer, "Taxpayers who interacted with the office were regularly informed about the backlog and told they may see a delay in money being removed from their accounts. Staff," they said, "had been steadily working to catch up as new returns continued to be filed." The Montgomery County Comptroller's Office is currently in the process of auditing the department for the three-year period ending in 2020. So that from the Inquirer this morning. And then there's this. as to what's going on in Harrisburg. One piece of legislation in particular, and I think we've talked about this issue on the show before, pertaining to cell phones in schools. And I remember listeners calling in, voicing concern about restricting the use of cell phones during the school day for security reasons. You know, we have to think about these things in today's society, given how frequently we've had mass shootings in schools, unfortunately. And many of our listeners who called in on this issue said that students should have access to their cell phones at all times just in case something should happen like that. Well, lawmakers up there in Harrisburg are introducing legislation to limit student cell phone use during the school day. This I got from politicspa.com. They report that back in January, Representative Barb Gleam, a Republican from Cumberland County, introduced House Bill 2043, implementing a policy that prohibits students from processing or using personal mobile devices, possessing or using personal mobile devices during the school day. Her bill also requires public school entities to have a written policy that includes a process for students and parents to contact each other during the school day if necessary. So at least that part of the equation is handled in her piece of the legislation, that piece where voiced the concerns of listeners who called into the show in the past about that. They're playing solitaire on it, she said. They're playing games on it, and they're using social media on their cell phones, Representative Gleam told politicspa.com. But they're not actually using it for school. She said, we got to get back to the basics where kids are coming in and getting down to business of learning math, science, and reading without being distracted by a cell phone. Well, I couldn't agree more with that. 3 months later, Senator Ryan Aument, from a Republican from Lancaster County, wants to introduce legislation to limit students' use of cell phones in schools through secure, lockable phone bags, in which students would deposit their mobile devices until the end of the school day. Now that, I could see where that would be a concern, again, for those listeners who called into the show in the past about this issue, because it wouldn't give students ready access to their phones in the case of an emergency. While it's great that the Commonwealth dedicated an additional $100 million last year to schools to care for students' mental health, that money won't go very far unless we get at the root cause of the problem, Aument said. Because we know widespread access to smartphones and social media apps increases depression, anxiety, feelings of isolation, and even suicidal thoughts in teens and children, Aument said his bill is a common-sense approach to improve student mental health and academic performance alike. Last year, Florida became the first state to crack down on phones in school. A law there that took effect in July requires all Florida public schools to ban student cell phone use during class time and block access to social media on district Wi-Fi. Some districts, including Orange County Public Schools, went further and banned phones the entire school day. Indiana's Republican Governor Eric Holcomb just signed into law a bill that requires school districts there to prohibit cell phone use during instructional time, with some exceptions. A similar bill is advancing in Oklahoma, and legislation has been introduced in Kansas and Vermont. In response to Gleam's bill in Harrisburg, a spokesman for the Pennsylvania School Boards Association issued a statement that read the following: student access to electronic devices is and continues to be an issue discussed by school leaders across the state. Our members strive to provide an educational environment that is orderly, safe, and effective for learning. Our position is that locally elected school leaders are in the best position to make decisions related to student use of electronic devices during the school day. We are expecting children to have the discipline to disconnect from social media and their phones, but most adults can't even do that, said Senator Aument. Instead of putting an adult responsibility on their shoulders, he says his bill would give them a break during school hours and the opportunity they deserve to learn without a constant distraction in their pockets. The data is clear, he said. There is a direct causation, not just a correlation, between the rise of smartphones and the decline in mental health, social skills, and academic success of our kids, and they need us to be the adults and break the cycle for the sake of their future. All right, so with that said, again, I got that from politicspa.com, and I throw it out to you again to discuss this with me, share your thoughts on this. You've got two bills up there in Harrisburg, or one bill and one that's coming shortly, that wants to put limits on cell phone use. Then you've got the School Boards Association of Pennsylvania saying that it should be up to the school districts themselves to decide what to do about cell phone use during the school day. And I can see all sides of this. There are good points on all of these. Senator Allman's point is well taken, at least as far as I'm concerned, regarding cell phone use and the effects that it has on a child's mental health because of text messaging that can go out, bullying through the use of texting and other ways that they can see posts on social media that might be detrimental to them. So what are your thoughts on this? I'd love to hear from you on whether or not cell phones should be restricted during the school day. 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459 if you'd like to weigh in on it. Well, our governor apparently has been using the state's airplane far more than his predecessor. Yeah, we'll talk about this article from Spotlight PA when feedback continues in just a bit. Stay with us.
News you can use.
I feel more informed when I listen.
News Talk 830, WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on Air Town Square here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Our phone number is here at 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. By the way, this programming note, on Wednesday of this week at 9:30, I'll be joined by Dave McCormick, the Republican candidate for Pennsylvania's U.S. Senate seat that Bob Casey Jr., currently occupies, and of course he's going to be going up against Casey in November. So that's Wednesday morning at 9:30. Dave McCormick will be here on Feedback. All right, I mentioned going into the break that Governor Shapiro uses the state's airplane much more than his predecessor did. In fact, that's the headline of an article that appears in Spotlight PA today. It's written by Stephen Caruso. And here's what that article has to say, at least part of the article. A two-engine, eight-seat Beechcraft King Air 350i took off from a small regional airport across the Susquehanna River from Pennsylvania's state capital at 3:22 p.m. on August 17th. After a two-hour flight, it arrived at Hilton Head Island in South Carolina, a ritzy vacation spot known for beaches and golf courses, to meet its passenger, Governor Josh Shapiro. The next day, the plane left Hilton Head at 7 a.m. for a flight back to Pennsylvania, bringing Shapiro to Scranton. It then deposited the Democrat back in South Carolina a little before 3 p.m. One last two-hour flight returned the plane to Harrisburg, where it arrived around 5:40 p.m. on August 18th. The four-leg journey cost taxpayers just over $13,000, and was the longest and most expensive of 113 trips that Pennsylvania's state-owned plane made during Shapiro's first year in office. All told, the plane accrued more than 9 days of flight time, ferrying Shapiro, Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis, Attorney General Michelle Henry, and other state officials around the Commonwealth and the country last year. the total bill to taxpayers, get a load of this, was $410,000, the most they've paid for state flight since 2011, according to available data and this article in Spotlight PA. August journey, revealed in publicly available logs analyzed by Spotlight PA, shows the heavy use the Shapiro administration has made of the plane as he has barnstormed the state. The aircraft has sometimes touched down in as many as 7 airfields around the Commonwealth in a single day. As many as 2/3 of the cost of those flights were accrued directly by the governor's office, a dramatic increase in plane travel compared to Shapiro's predecessor, Democratic Governor Tom Wolf. But Shapiro's administration, as well as former executive branch staffers, have argued that the plane connects people with their government officials. According to an administration spokesperson, such outreach includes when Shapiro became the first governor to visit Punxsutawney for Groundhog's Day since 2012. A May visit to Whitehaven to open a new state park entrance, and an October stop in Kinzua Bridge State Park to announce hundreds of thousands of dollars in state investments for the region. Pennsylvanians expect their governor to be out in their communities, listening, learning, and delivering, not just sitting behind a desk in Harrisburg. So said Shapiro spokesperson Manuel Bonder, said that in a statement. He went on to say, and that's why Governor Shapiro has always kept an aggressive and rigorous travel schedule that has taken him to every county in our Commonwealth several times over. Well, in his first year in office, Shapiro surpassed Wolf's busiest air travel year, racking up $270,000 in fuel, maintenance, and personnel expenses during almost 150 hours of flight time last year alone. Wolf used the aircraft most in 2018, the last year of his first term, in which he spent a little more than 77 hours in the air, costing $136,000. Former GOP Governor Tom Corbett's busiest flight year was 2014, in which he spent almost 84 hours in the plane, costing taxpayers $103,000. There are some caveats, writes Stephen Caruso for his Spotlight PA piece. The state's flight data, which it must report under a 2012 law, lumped together trips by day. An official may be listed as a passenger even if they took just one leg of a day's flight plan that covered multiple stops. The reasons for the trips aren't always clear, despite a state law requiring agencies to report their public purpose. But piecing together Shapiro's incomplete public schedule, public media reports, and flight logs shows that he has used the plane to travel to a mix of public announcements, private meetings with officials across the country, and even a Phillies playoff game. Some government watchdogs say the resulting travel expenses are way too high. The governor does not need a taxpayer-funded Air Force to travel, so says Eric Epstein, a longtime good government advocate. He told Spotlight PA that, arguing that Shapiro could take more remote meetings. He added, you don't build relationships or get a budget done by racking up frequent flyer miles. The plane's single busiest day last year, according to PennDOT records, was October 24th. On that date, the plane took off from Capital City Airport at 8:11 a.m. and did not return to its hangar until almost 11 hours later, just after 7:15 p.m. Along the way, it made 7 stops that day, including in Philadelphia, York, Pittsburgh, Indiana, Pennsylvania, that is, and Wilkes-Barre, with Shapiro, PennDOT Secretary Mike Carroll, Department of Community and Economic Development Secretary Rex Seeger, and staff listed as passengers. While Shapiro does not release his entire schedule, his website notes he attended 2 public events that day: the opening of an Amazon fulfillment center in York at 10:15 a.m., and Westinghouse's announcement of new nuclear technology outside Pittsburgh at 1:30 p.m. All told, the plane spent a little more than 4 hours in the air that day and cost taxpayers $8,200. The plane hasn't only been used for in-state travel, though. PennDOT's records reveal 4 out-of-state trips, including one to Hilton Head. The Hilton Head trip, the administration contended, was also state business. Shapiro was on a personal trip, when the mother of U.S. Senator Bob Casey died and he attended the funeral in his official capacity as governor, then returned to South Carolina. Wow. And this governor is firmly in favor of combating climate change. So to me, this is hypocrisy, plain and simple, with such frequent use of a jet. And I agree with the gentleman in this article that says that he can do more remote meetings and be just as effective than just someone who is glad-handing people and running a, well, shall we say, running a ghost campaign for president. You know, we all know what his ambitions are. He wants to be president someday, and why not use taxpayer money to start campaigning for that higher office? By the way, if you've been in a Target or a Walmart lately, you might have seen this change underway that the Wall Street Journal is reporting on. They're saying that store operators are modifying how they use those self-checkout stations in a bid to boost their bottom lines and improve the shopping experience for customers. The Wall Street Journal reports that some retailers are pulling kiosks out of their stores as a way to keep a lid on theft. Others, including Target and Dollar General, have limited how many items customers can bring to self-checkouts to avoid bottlenecks and alleviate headaches for staff. Back in March, Five Below's chief executive officer, Joel Anderson, said the retail chain limited the number of open self-checkout registers and positioned employees at more checkout lanes to assist customers. Walmart pulled self-checkout lanes from a handful of its stores in recent months based on feedback from associates and customers, according to a company spokesman. Self-checkout was introduced to reduce the cost needed to staff registers adequately, with companies such as CVS Health deploying them 20 years ago. With self-checkout, one worker can monitor and help shoppers at several registers. Its use accelerated during the COVID-19 pandemic, when human-to-human contact lessened. But self-checkouts have contributed to increased shrink. That's the industry term used to describe losses from theft, lost inventory, or damaged goods, because shoppers make mistakes or they steal. Retailers hesitant to spend more on staffing are deciding if they prefer to reduce labor costs or combat shrink. About a fifth of people who use self-checkout said they accidentally took an item without paying for it, according to a survey of 2,000 shoppers last year by LendingTree. Some 15% of self-checkout users admitted to stealing an item on purpose. On social media, some users have posted videos of shoppers scanning a lower-priced item instead of the higher-priced item that should have been scanned. David Johnston is Vice President of Asset Protection and Retail Operations at the National Retail Federation, which is a trade group, and he's quoted in this Wall Street Journal article as saying, "Shoplifting used to be mostly invisible. What we are seeing today are methods that are open and brazen." So you may find that your favorite retailer is either drastically reducing the number of these self-checkout stations or eliminating them altogether. And this would be the reason why. You know, one thing that always got me, I'll share this with you. Every time I go to Walmart, and I do use their self-checkout line more frequently than I would use an aisle that has a checkout line that has a cashier, simply because most of their checkout lines are not open when I'm there. They may have one or two people at their checkout aisles, but for the most part, I go to use their self-checkout lane. And it never fails. You always have somebody at the door, an employee at the door, checking your bag to see that what you scanned is what is on your receipt. And what gets me is that their machine, or at least the Walmart I go to, the machine asks you, do you want a receipt or not? And because of the person at the door, I always say, yeah, print out a receipt, even though I don't want to waste the paper and I don't want to have to take it home and throw it into the trash the minute I do get home. But because of the fact that you've got somebody there who's going to check your bag, I have to print out that receipt. And now this article shows why, proves why. And unfortunately, this is the way we're living today. This is reality, that so many people are ripping off retailers that they've got to take a stand against it. All right. Speaking of ripping off, did you hear what the Chicago Teachers Union is demanding? Man, oh, my eyes popped out when I saw what their demands are. I got this from Fox News. They say that the Chicago Teachers Union is negotiating a new contract with a public school system out there and is understood to be calling for an extra $50 billion, that's billion with a B, to pay for wage hikes, as well as other demands, such as this, fully paid abortions for its members, new migrant services and facilities, and a host of LGBT-related requirements and training in schools. Yeah, you heard me right. The teachers union out there wants fully paid abortions for its teacher members. To put the figure into context, again, they're asking for an extra $50 billion in pay. The total base tax receipts for the state of Illinois last year were only $50.7 billion. Unbelievable. The incredible demands are being made despite its members delivering underwhelming results for its students. Get a load of this. Only 21% of the city's eighth graders are proficient readers. That's according to the last nation's report card, which provides national results about students' performance. The Chicago Tribune reports that the CBS budget will exceed $9 billion this year, up nearly 30% from $7.4 billion just 5 years ago. CPS is, of course, the Chicago public school system. Much of that increase is reflected in teacher salaries, which are among the highest of any big city teachers in the country. Last school year, the district spent more than $21,000 per student, far above the national average of $14,347, according to census data. So now they want $50 billion more for wage hikes, and they want their members to get fully paid abortions and have the taxpayers fund that. Boy, am I glad I don't live in Chicago. How about you? Love to hear from you on this. Did this make your eyes pop out like it did for me? Let me know. Give us a call when feedback continues in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Collegeville, North Wales, King of Prussia, and all of Montgomery County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
Voice of Berks and Beyond.
Little bit of Alabama coming out of that commercial break there. Right here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, as feedback continues on this Monday. Let's go to the phones right now. Patrick in Moton wants to weigh in on that self-checkout story that we talked about. Patrick, good morning. Welcome to feedback.
Good morning, Bill. Real quick story. I was at Walmart, and of course, the self-checkout line was about 30 people deep. Oh, and they only had about 4 of the 8 or 10 self-checkout registers open, and I asked why. I asked the manager after I was done, and they told me that on their policy is only one employee is allowed to monitor 4 checkout stations. And then I asked the manager, well, why does it matter when the employee is sitting there on their phone texting? Literally, I took a picture of it, and they're just texting their friend, not paying attention to anything. So when they do ask you for the receipt when you walk out the door, I am completely offended. I don't like being treated like a common criminal just right. because I shop at Walmart. Mm-hmm. So I just tell them as I walk out the door, I said, if you think I stole it, call the police. Otherwise, I'm leaving. And I walk out the door.
Oh, my. I don't think I could ever do that. But, yeah, I feel the same way as you do. I feel like I'm being treated like a common criminal, even though I follow their policies. I've never scanned a lower-priced item in replacement of a higher-priced item, or literally stolen something in the checkout line like some other customers might do. And yet, you're right. You're made to feel like you have committed a crime.
Yep. If they're worried about the theft, then deal with the people doing the theft. Don't burden, you know, honest customers with something. So it boils my blood. Like, you're assuming I'm stealing something.
Right.
By asking for the receipt, you think I'm stealing something, and you want to prove that I'm not. Well, that's your problem, not mine.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, goodness, if it's such an issue, then put cameras over each of the self-checkout lines so that you can monitor people as they're using them.
They do, and actually that caught me one time because I was scanning a bunch of the same item.
Uh-huh.
So I'd put one in one hand and swipe it, and then I'd grab the next item out of my other hand to swipe it to make the process quicker. And it actually catches, and it beeps at you, and it calls for an employee. And the employee actually watched the video right there on the checkout screen.
Oh, really?
To verify that it wasn't being stolen. It was just the way I was processing the checkout. It notifies them.
So the video comes up on the monitor of the checkout machine.
Yep, right there. Once she punches in her code, it replays the video.
Oh.
I was scanning items.
Okay.
So, and just another layer of you're asking me for the receipt, you still don't trust me, even though you have all those things in place. Like, you know, I don't think so.
If you ever go into that store, would you say no to the question, do you want a receipt? Would you ever say no to that?
No, I do take the receipt, but I just in case I need to return something. Now, if it's a simple item where I'm just running in to grab something I know I need, you know, I will skip it. I don't think you can. Walmart, it's either print, email, or both. I don't think there's an option to skip.
Ah, oh, well, that's what it is. That's an email.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about anybody else, but what I'm finding with my AOL account is that when I have something emailed to that account, it takes forever for it to show up. And and so if I'm leaving Walmart before it shows up on my email account, then how would I prove that what's in the bag is something I paid for? Yeah, that's why I go with a paper receipt. Thank you.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. Well, you ought to try it sometime. It's liberating.
I hate shopping. I really do.
Well, you and me both. Have a good day, Bill.
You too, Patrick. Thanks for the call. 610-374-8800, toll-free 888-401-0459. The Wall Street Journal editorial board's got an interesting op-ed piece that appears in the paper today. The headline reads, "The Government Spending Jobs Boom." So let me share with you what they've written here. Friday's labor market report for April showed employers continued to add jobs, albeit at a slower pace. Most notable was that more than half of the new jobs last month were in government, healthcare, and social assistance. Government spending is conjuring job growth, but they aren't the kind that add to long-term productivity growth. The unemployment rate ticked up 0.1 of a percentage point to 3.9% in April, while payroll jobs increased 175,000. The latter was less than economists had predicted, and job growth was revised downward by a combined 22,000 from March and February. Average hourly earnings climbed 0.2% in April. That's a slower rate than the 3.9% over the last year. All of this suggests an easing labor market, which is why stock prices jumped. Markets are betting that a slowing economy will spur the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates sooner rather than later. Maybe. But there's still plenty of fiscal stimulus coursing through the economy, which is evident by the boom in jobs that depend on government spending. Government, health care, and social assistance accounted for about 95,000 of last month's new jobs. Over the last year, these industries have made up nearly 60% of the country's 2.8 million in job growth. They made up less than 30% of the new jobs during the first 3 years of the Trump presidency before the pandemic. President Biden boasts that he's leading a U.S. manufacturing comeback. But manufacturing has added a mere 20,000 jobs over the last year. That's a fraction of the number in healthcare, which came in at 765,000. Government at 618,000 new jobs created. Government jobs. And social assistance, 257,000 jobs. At the same time, employment in mining and transportation and warehousing has been flat. Leisure and hospitality has added roughly 408,000 jobs over the last year, but only 5,000 in the last month. Most of these jobs are also part-time. While leisure and hospitality jobs have finally surpassed pre-pandemic levels, the total hours worked in the industry has not. While there are more jobs, employees are working fewer hours now. In many states run by progressives, such as Oregon, California, and Illinois, government, health care, and social assistance account for more than all of the net new jobs. That means those states are losing jobs in other industries. Illinois has added about 52,000 jobs in government, health care, and social assistance over the last year, about double the number of its overall new jobs. Oregon has lost about 2,000 jobs on net, but has added 24,000 new ones in these industries we're talking about. Most states and localities continue to burn through federal pandemic largesse, which is helping support the labor market. Despite the end of the pandemic emergency a year ago, Medicaid spending continues to climb, 4.4% in the last 6 months alone. That spending pads the number of new health care jobs. So do other transfer payments, many of which are increased with inflation. A nation with an aging baby boom generation will naturally need more health care and social welfare jobs, such as home health workers. These aren't bad jobs. Any honest work is good work, and often they fulfill a social and market need, writes the Wall Street Journal editorial board. But jobs that rely on transfer payments from government aren't the kind of investment-based jobs that will create new products or productivity gains that add to national wealth. Annual federal budget deficits of nearly $2 trillion also aren't sustainable over the long term. Sooner rather than later, the U.S. will need an investment-based boom in the private economy to finance all of these government-financed jobs. That's the Wall Street Journal editorial board with a piece titled, "The Government Spending Jobs Boom." Keep this in mind the next time you hear our president cheer himself on and pat himself on the back with how many jobs he's created since he's taken office. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back with more of Feedback on this Monday morning in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Bethel, Hamburg, Birdsboro, and all of Berks County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
The voice of Berks and beyond.
By the way, I just got in from the AP, and I'm sure that ABC News will have more on this, but they're reporting that the judge in the criminal hush money trial of Donald Trump said today that he will consider jail time for the former president for additional violations of the gag order after finding that $1,000 fines are not working as a deterrent. Justice Juan Merchan, who has already imposed $9,000 in fines on Trump, said during the hearing that he will find Trump in contempt of court for the 10th time. So again, ABC News, I'm sure, will have more on this as the morning progresses. And want to remind you that Spring Garden Farms is our business of the week. Stop by their location for all your gardening needs at 1585 Main Street in Birdsboro, and you can find them on Facebook. With that said, we wrap up the first hour of this Monday edition of Feedback, but we'll be back with more for making us part of your day today.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off hour number two of Feedback. You're on Air Town Square here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders along with Sean Tansky. And our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. Our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. And our email address here is feedback@830weeu.com. There's an interesting video that's making its way around the internet, and I just had to share it with you today. Jared Bernstein is the focus of this video. Who is he? Well, he's the chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, and he was interviewed for a new film called Finding the Money. That's a documentary made by advocates at a group called Modern Monetary Theory, or MMT. It's a controversial line of economic thought. In fact, one of MMT's central tenets is that government budget deficits don't matter for countries like the United States that borrow money in their own currencies. Believe it or not, proponents argue this means the government should use tax and spending policies to manage the economy and address inflation instead of the central bank's monetary policies. Well, in the documentary, Bernstein was asked a very simple question. How does the monetary policy work in this country? Here's how he answered, or I should say, how he tried to answer that question.
The U.S. government can't go bankrupt because we can print our own money.
It obviously begs the question, why exactly are we borrowing in a currency that we print ourselves? I'm waiting for someone to stand up and say, why do we borrow our own currency in the first place?
Like you said, they print the dollar, so why does the government even borrow?
Well, some of this stuff gets, some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money, and it definitely lends that money, which is why the government definitely prints money, and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. Yeah, they sell bonds. Right, since they sell bonds and people buy the bonds and lend them the money. Yeah, so a lot of times, at least to my ear with MMT, the language and the concepts can be kind of unnecessarily confusing, but there is no question that the government prints money and then it uses that money to, I don't get it, I don't know what they're talking about, like, because it's like the government clearly prints money, it does it all the time, and it clearly borrows, otherwise we wouldn't be having this debt and deficit conversation, so I don't think there's anything confusing there.
Wow. This is the man who chairs the White House Council of Economic Advisors. He's got the president's ear. And he's making recommendations regarding our economy, and he can't answer a simple question. I say simple because I studied economics in college, and monetary policy was handled in the first year, actually in the first semester of me majoring in economics. Very simple question in my mind, but the man who chairs the White House Council of Economic Advisors can't answer that. That speaks volumes. By the way, the White House Council of Economic Advisors didn't respond to a request for comment after that video went viral, by the way. Now, according to his online biography, and I'm going to read this to you because I have to ask, why was this man chosen as chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors? Here's what his online biography reads. He's an American economist. Well, I really would love to know how they got that. He chairs the United States Council of Economic Advisors, which I told you about. He's a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, something else that frightens me. Wait till you find out what his educational background is. From 2009 to 2011, Bernstein was the chief economist and economic advisor to then Vice President Joe Biden in the Obama administration. In 2008, Michael Shear described Bernstein as a progressive and a strong advocate for workers. Now, let me tell you about Mr. Bernstein's educational background, and you tell me if you hear the word economics or economy mentioned anywhere in his background as far as education is concerned. Bernstein graduated with a bachelor's degree in music from the Manhattan School of Music. He also earned a Master of Social Work from Hunter College, as well as a doctorate in social work in social welfare from Columbia University's School of Social Work. Yeah, he's got a bachelor's degree in music and a doctorate in social welfare. Nowhere in there does it say he studied economics. And yet he's taking on these major roles of an economic advisor to our president. If that doesn't explain why we're in the economic mess we're in today, I don't know what does. Here's what the Council of Economic Advisors does. It's an agency within the executive office of the president and charged with providing the president objective economic advice on the formulation of both domestic and international economic policy. What the heck does somebody with a music degree and a social welfare degree know about domestic and international economics? You tell me. Love to hear from you on it. 610-374-8800, toll-free 888-401-0459, and our text line is 484-650-3373. Let's go to the phones right now, head to Hamburg, and speak with Maria. Maria, good morning. Welcome
to
Feedback.
Good morning, Bill. Wow. I'll tell you what, you know, boy, they lie like hell.
Uh-oh, who's lying now? And watch your language now.
You know, yeah, you know, I just wanted to know, Bill, can you hang on just a second?
I'm only doing a radio show here. I'll tell you what, Maria, if you can hear me, I'll take a commercial break and then I'll come back to you, okay? So, Maria, hang in there while you're doing your thing on your end of the radio. I'm going to do my thing on this end of the radio, okay? Stay with us. We'll be back with Maria's call when Feedback continues in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Paoli, Glenmore, Coatesville, and all of Chester County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
Welcome back to Feedback here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. And let's check in. Let's see if Maria's ready now. Maria, okay. Are you ready now?
Yes, I'm ready, Bill. Oh, I'm sorry that, you know, that never happened to me before when I called WEEU. But anyway, you know, this inflation, it's getting really, really out of hand. Like, you know, like Comcast bill, my bill went up $26, okay?
Uh-huh.
So, and of course, when you call, you know, you get these people, nothing against these people from these other countries when you call, but, you know, half the time I don't understand, you know, what they're saying. And, you know, on Saturday I get my electric bill, and, you know, in a little red thing on the envelope, it says rate increase information inside.
Okay.
So then, you know, the gasoline prices are up. You know, everything is going up. I mean, it is, you know, I mean, where, you know, when is this going to, you know, it's going to stop?
Well, I unfortunately for the president, I don't think it's going to stop by between now and November. I think it's going to get worse, to be honest with you.
And I was listening to you about the guy with, oh my God, it is terrible. You know, these people, they lie, and, you know, and are they, you know, they're in the wrong position that they don't know anything about it, you know, and they're trying to run the country. I mean, it's terrible. It is absolutely terrible. Is, you know, like, and I, you know, like I said to the guy from Comcast, I finally got somebody that could speak the language, you know, and I could understand it. And I said, you know, I said, we don't get raises like that on our income, you know, especially on the fixed income. We just don't get these kind of raises. And then prices keep going up and up and up all the time. It's really, it's hard. you know.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you. And, you know, I had another caller call in a week or so ago to tell me that her electric bill is going up.
And
that's just the beginning. I think you're going to start seeing that electric bills are going to go sky high in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're talking about requests an overall increase of $146 million per year.
Wow.
And you know, and it's like a residential customer, a 1,000 kilowatt will increase $187 and 70 cents to $205.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. I mean, when I saw it, you know, I mean, I was like, wow, you know, what is going on? You know, well, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, we have to start, you know, drill.
Yep, absolutely. I heard that somewhere before.
Know, I can, you know, I mean, you know, like when I look at the, you know, the, you know, with, you know, like some of the, when I look at the weather report and then they, you know, they put years back, you know, same thing happens that happens today. I am sorry, but I am not, you know, I do not believe in climate change. I just do not believe it. I mean, I remember my dad used to say, you know, the world is like a wheel. It keeps going around and around and around. And that's the way it is.
Yeah. When you listen to AccuWeather last week when they were, citing some of the afternoon highs and saying that it was close to a record set back in 1899 for Pete's sake.
I know. When I see that and I say, what is wrong with these people today? You know, them. You know, I just, you know, it's unbelievable, Bill. But anyway, so that's all I wanted to bitch about.
Now you got to watch. Now, come on now, Maria, yes. Don't forget now, you're on the air, you got to. You have to watch your language here.
I said, well, I'm just complaining. Okay.
All right.
Complaining, but I'm sorry. And I'm still waiting for my, you know, for my opera, you know, to be serenaded. Okay, Bill, you keep up the good work. You're doing a great job. You guys are great. You know, I love to listen to you guys. And, you know, and have a blessed day.
You too, Maria. Thanks for calling in. It was worth the wait to hear what you had to say today.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, take care.
Yep.
Bye-bye now. Yeah, when I came into work this morning, I saw that the gallon of a regular unleaded gasoline was now $3.80 at one gas station. And at another, it was $3.85 a gallon. So it's going in the wrong direction than what the president really wants it to go in. And my fear is that he's going to tap the Strategic Petroleum Reserve again in order to get the price down so it looks better as we get closer to November. I just hope he doesn't do that. But with an economic advisor like this Jared Bernstein, who knows what he's capable of doing between now and then. Anyway, what's the price of a gallon of gas that you're... Well, okay, you got to answer the phone. Never mind, Sean. I'll ask you that point later. But yeah, the prices today are not going to come down anytime soon. And I'd love to hear from you folks. What are you finding as far as the price of a gallon of gasoline is concerned in this immediate area, I should ask, because I know points north... There's a certain person who calls to this show and tells me how low it is in his neck of the woods, and he's farther north than us. But I'd love to hear from people in Montgomery, Chester, as well as Berks County, telling me what you're seeing as far as the price of gasoline is concerned in your neck of the woods. All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's head to Montgomery County, actually, and head to Schwenksville and talk with Sue today. Sue, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning, Bill. You know, when you just played that that clip of Jared Bernstein, that was mind-blowing. I mean, these are the people that are advising Biden. And it just goes to show you that, and I've heard that his cabinet, all the people that are advising him, all his upper-level people, are not qualified. And it's pretty clear from some of the other, you know, cabinet members, too, that they're not qualified. They're there because of identity politics. They check a box or something, but this is horrifying. And I would like to challenge any of your Democrat listeners, some of these guys that call in that are very lefty, I would like them to call in and explain how they can have any confidence at all in this administration when they hear something like that. It's just stunning, and we're all suffering here.
Yeah, when I saw that video and I heard him struggling with that question. I thought, my goodness, I studied that my first semester in college, for Pete's sakes. And then I went online to check his educational background. And when I saw what it was, I thought, what the heck is he doing as an economic advisor to the president of the United States? I don't get it. And apparently he's had a long history with Biden. So Biden being loyal to people who are loyal to him put him in this position. But my, oh, my, I think it speaks volumes, Sue.
Yeah, I do, too. I think it's terrible. And, you know, I would think that, you know, when you're going to be president, and I'm hoping that at this point in time, President Trump or ex-President Trump, whatever you want to say, is lining up all his ducks and getting the most, effective people and the most qualified people to fill cabinet positions when he gets elected, because that's the most important thing that this guy does, because he can't make all the decisions himself. He needs advisors that know what the heck they're talking about.
Certainly one advisor who doesn't know what he's talking about, for sure.
And when it comes to monetary policy, yikes, as you just said, gas prices are going up. How can he tap into the strategic reserve again? It's down by half. You know, we're all just reeling out here.
And yet there are polls that show now that Biden is ahead, according to the ABC News poll that just came out. And I'm thinking, okay, who are you talking to? I don't see many people who are really happy with this administration. And on the other side of the coin, a lot of people aren't happy with the alternative either, November.
I'll tell you something. In my career, I was a data analyst at an insurance company. And I can tell you that you can make data show whatever you want. And especially when it comes to these polls and things like that, you know, who are you polling and where are you polling them? I mean, there's so much manipulation that can go on with those things. And as we saw during the, 2016 election, everybody was sold on, hey, you know, Hillary Clinton's getting in, she's getting in, blah, blah, blah. The polls all show it. Well, guess what? The polls were wrong. And people lie to pollsters as well because they don't want to look like they support the other guy or the wrong guy. So, yeah, they don't really mean anything. The real poll that counts is on Election Day.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I've often wondered if the purpose for reporting on polls is a way for the media to try to influence the vote. I'm thinking that, okay, all of these polls that are showing that Trump is in the lead, are they reporting on those to get the lefties out there to vote in November so that Biden ends up winning? Because if there's anything that's going to get Democrats out to vote in November, it's their fear of Donald Trump getting back in the White House.
Or it could be so that conservatives are complacent. They think, he's getting in. I don't need to go to the polls. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, and that's all election interference.
Yeah.
And honestly, this lawfare thing, this persecution that they're doing of Trump for these things that they're not crimes. And, that's all election interference. It really seriously is. And we have a lot to fear here about what's happening to our country and our justice system.
Well, so far, if it is a coordinated campaign to keep Trump from winning in November, all of these court cases or charges that he's facing, it's not working in the Democrats' favor up to this point. If anything, it's strengthening Donald Trump. So
it's backfiring on them.
Yeah, it certainly is. Now, of course, the more serious charges have yet to come up. We'll wait to see what those court hearings are going to be like.
Well, the Jack Smith thing, wasn't there something that came out where they admitted that they tampered with evidence in that case? That was the documents case. I'd have to find it and send it to you, but I saw where they admitted that they did tamper with evidence.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Yeah, if you do have that article, send it to me. I'd love to read that.
I will. Because if they've tampered with evidence, that has to get thrown out. That, you know, you can't go into a case like that with tampering with the evidence. That's just, it's flat out wrong. So,
all right. Well, if you find that, if you find it, do send it to me. I'd love to read it.
Will do.
All right, Sue. Thanks for the call today. Appreciate it.
Okay. Right. I couldn't help it. After you played that clip, I was like stunned.
All right. Thanks for the call. You take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Have a good one.
Bye. You too. Bye-bye now. 610-374-8800. Toll free, 888-401-0459. Here's an interesting article that I saw on Fox News' website. They're reporting that transgender college runner Sadie Schreiner won three women's events at the Liberty League Championship meet on Saturday. Schreiner of the Rochester Institute of Technology won the 400 meters with a time of 55 minutes and 7 seconds, and the 200 meters, 55.07 seconds, and the 200 meters at 24.14 seconds. Both times would have been last in the men's races at the meet, but they were school records in the women's category. Let me reread that. Both times would have been last in the men's races at the meet, but they were school records in the women's category, according to the site that lists the results of the meet. The 200-meter time is now a Liberty League Conference women's record, beating Schreiner's own previous record of 24:50 set earlier this season. Schreiner was also the anchor leg of the 4x400 that won by nearly 3 seconds. They were in fourth place when Schreiner received the baton, but she ran the fastest anchor leg of the race. Schreiner, who was born a male named Camden and attended Hillsborough High School in New Jersey, has the 20th best 100-meter time for boys in school history. It would have been the fastest for girls. Earlier this season, Schreiner also set a women's school record in the 300 meters at the Nazareth Alumni Opener Invitational. Schreiner recently posted on Instagram that she feels she does not have an automatic advantage as a biological male. Here's what she put in her post. Out of all the hate that's been shared of me, cheater is the most common word used. In my eyes, the discussion of trans inclusion in athletics shouldn't even be a debate. Schreiner went on to write, as more research is done, the more evident this becomes. There's a reason I'm only as fast as I was in middle school, and the only variable that's changed over my 9 years of running is my medication. Even as Olympic studies prove the disadvantages of trans athletes, it's not enough, she went on to write. Policies are being changed before research is done, and the only way to stay educated in this process is to talk to the few trans athletes that are competing and hear their stories. Bring them into the conversation. The only way to make an educated decision on a small handful of athletes is to hear their voice, not speak for them, she wrote. Six states sued the Department of Education last week over the overhaul of Title IX, which we talked about last week, which is intended to give transgender athletes more protection. In April, five middle school students forfeited a shot put event due to the inclusion of a trans athlete and were suspended for another meet because of it. Those five middle school students were all females, and we talked about that last week as well. So, yeah, a very interesting article that shows that this transgender college runner's record in competing as a female are records. But if she were running as a male, it would be far from a record. So is this fair? I mean, that's the question here. Is this fair for transgenders to continue to compete in women's athletics? To me, I don't think it is, but I'd love to hear from you and find out what you think. Again, the numbers are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. We'll take a break, but we'll be back with your calls in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Myerstown, Fredericksburg, Newmanstown, and all of Lebanon County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. And let's head back to the phones right now. Let's go to Redding and speak with Mike today, who wants to weigh in on that Jared Bernstein story. Mike, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning, and thank you. That was a ridiculous rebuttal he even said. He sounded like Karine Jean-Pierre. Honestly, he never answered the question, but just staggered and stuttered. And I have to agree with Susan Shanksville, because she always says that, you know, we have to look at the objective. And honestly, the objective on this case is not because you're qualified, but because you check boxes. Because you have Karine Jean-Pierre, you have Rachel Levine, you have Pete Buttigieg, and those people are not, they're not qualified, just like Jared. I'm a musician, so I'm just waiting for a phone call, because these people are not qualified to make decisions on, like him, economic issues. So I was really disappointed, and he just evaded.
Well, he evaded because he didn't know the answer.
Yeah, precisely. So, you know, if you surround yourself with the wrong people, nobody's going to make the right decision. If you're a business owner, that's a different story. Then what are you supposed to do? You've got to surround yourself with the right people to make decisions. But if you have an unlimited money supply coming in, which the government does, then all of a sudden you can get these people like this. So all you got to do is check the boxes, because that's going to get you votes someday.
Good point. Mike, thank you. Appreciate you calling in.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Fleetwood. Dale wants to weigh in on the transgender story I just shared with you before the break. Dale, good morning. Welcome to Feedback. Whoop. Let's see here. There we go. Dale, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Thank you. I find that the whole thing that you just read about the winnings, you would think that if these transgendered folks were feeling hampered by their lack to get to the top of the field as males because of the high competition of very capable people, they'd start their own league, because they're now doing to the women what they were experiencing in the men's competition. First day?
Good.
You understand?
Yeah, good point. What are your thoughts about this overall? What needs to be done here, Dale? What do you think?
I think the whole thing should just be resolved by having some of these smart-thinking people form a transgender league. Let them compete about people of their own abilities, like the women were forced to do before and not get any money. Then they get favored that they can actually become part of the economy from their efforts, and now these people come and wipe it all away.
Yeah, and I don't know if, to be honest with you, Dale, I don't even know if that's the answer, because the numbers of transgenders are so small, I don't think there'd be enough to even make up a league.
Well, then it still bespeaks of their lack of fairness, because they're doing to the women what they were experiencing competing against more competent males.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not debating you. I think you're right, absolutely. Again, it's a case where science has created a problem for society that is not going to have a simple solution. And clearly allowing these transgenders to not only compete against females, which I agree with you is not fair, but also to have them share the same locker room it isn't right. And I know if I had a daughter in school today, I wouldn't want her sharing a locker room with someone who's got male genitalia. I mean, that's just not correct.
And the thing that I find especially funny is some of these people that then think that they should be able to transgender these young people without their parents' knowledge. How would they feel if it was their child?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I have one person in mind that I won't mention, but, you know, it's a family thing there where they hadn't had one of that gender in a long time. And if they transgendered without the parents knowing, how would they feel?
Yeah, there's
generations that gender has not been represented, in other words. How would they feel if and that particular person thinks it's all meant to be, that you can't tell parents because they may not be nice to the kids.
Dale, thanks for weighing in. I appreciate you taking the time to call this morning.
You're welcome.
All right, you take care now.
God save you, Dick.
Bye-bye now. 610-374-8800. Toll free, 888-401-0459. Those are the numbers. Well, a new document's out, or I should say, well, not new documents. They're old documents that have just been revealed. Show the president's campaign to censor various social media sites during the height of the pandemic. I got this from the Washington Times, and here's what they're reporting. YouTube, Facebook, and Amazon were frustrated in early 2021 by the Biden administration's pressure to censor and demote content related to COVID-19 vaccines and the origins of the coronavirus. The platforms ultimately removed and demoted posts and other content and collaborated with the White House on company censorship policy proposals. The Biden White House censorship campaign was so intrusive that big tech felt the need to run policy proposals by them. So said House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan, a Republican from Ohio. Jordan chronicled the Biden pressure campaign in a report based on thousands of emails and other documents obtained by the Judiciary Committee and its subcommittee on the weaponization of government. The report details the coerced collaboration between social media and the administration soon after President Biden took office. At the time, top Biden staffers were determined to quash online voices who disagreed with pandemic-related lockdowns and vaccine policies, and remove content that questioned the administration's insistence that the virus did not come from a lab in Wuhan, China. White House officials browbeat top social media outlets to play their part. The White House flagged content featuring Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and a clip of Senator Rand Paul, a Republican from Kentucky, speaking at a congressional hearing about the vaccine safety and efficacy. YouTube and other social media outlets were determined to remain in good standing with the Biden administration, partly because of the looming threat that they could lose their federally granted immunity from lawsuits over posted content. YouTube ultimately stepped up its censorship efforts to please the Biden administration. In September of 2021, the platform formulated a more aggressive policy to remove content that could mislead people on the safety and efficacy of vaccines. In March 2021, after receiving a critical email from a top White House official about anti-vaccine books, Amazon immediately created a Do Not Promote policy for those books, because of criticism from the Biden people. House investigators said 43 Amazon products, presumably vaccine-related books, were immediately flagged. Over at Meta, parent company of Facebook, executives there were frustrated by Mr. Biden's pressure campaign, emails show. Mark Zuckerberg, who is CEO of Meta, wrote to other top company executives suggesting Facebook should reveal that the White House put pressure on us to censor the lab leak theory. Those were his words. Top executives were fuming over the White House's public accusations that Facebook was responsible for COVID-19 deaths. According to an email from Meta Global Affairs President Nick Clegg, Facebook officials thought they were doing a decent job curbing COVID-19 misinformation on the platform under pressure from Mr. Biden's lieutenants, including the censorship of the Wuhan lab leak theory. That was what White House officials were telling them internally. On July 16, 2021, Mr. Biden declared that social media platforms, including Facebook, were killing people by allowing outrageous misinformation about the virus and vaccines on their platforms. Facebook executives were furious over that. The behavior of the White House over the last 24 hours has been highly cynical and dishonest, Mr. Clegg said in an email sent the same day. At the time, vaccination numbers were sagging amid reports of side effects and lack of efficacy. Administration officials cited a March report by the nonprofit Center for Countering Digital Hate that found leading anti-vaxxers among them, Mr. Kennedy, now a presidential candidate, were responsible for 73% of the anti-vaccination content. The center recommended deplatforming repeat offenders to end the proliferation of dangerous misinformation. Meta executives grappled with a response to Mr. Biden's public grenade. They began removing posts about the lab leak theory and content questioning the vaccine in February of 2021. Still, the company faced continued pressure to do more from the Biden administration's pandemic response advisor, who was Andy Slavitt. Mr. Slavitt warned Facebook in March of that year that the administration was considering our options on what to do in response to Facebook's resistance to removing anti-vaccination and other content because of free speech concerns. In the July 16th email exchange with Mr. Zuckerberg and Mr. Clegg, Meta Platform CEO Sheryl Sandberg said the best narrative for the company was that Biden administration officials are scapegoating us to cover their own missed vaccination rates and a virus they can't get control of through public policy. Mr. Zuckerberg told the Facebook team not to bow to pressure from the government and change its policies. Well, a few weeks later, Facebook developed more aggressive content moderation policies in response to continued criticism of their approach from the administration. Mr. Jordan said the document showcased the Biden administration's interference with free expression on social media. The House Judiciary Committee report concluded that the Biden administration was responsible for intimidating the platforms by squelching free debate over pandemic policies, many of which have been criticized and questioned. Because public health measures could not be fairly debated by the public and assessed on their merits, the Biden administration and other policymakers imposed public health measures that were devastating to schoolchildren, workers, and other Americans around the company, the report concluded. Today, it is widely accepted how foolish these measures were. House Republicans have introduced legislation to rein in government-sponsored censorship on social media. The bills include the Free Speech Protection Act and the Censorship Accountability Act, which lawmakers say will hold federal employees accountable for violating Americans' First Amendment rights. This is the same administration that is saying it's Donald Trump who is a danger to democracy. Squelching speech? That sounds to me like damaging or destroying democracy in this country. Wouldn't you agree? All right, we'll be back with more of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Traffic.
It's a source I can trust.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
Voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on Air Town Square here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond. 830 WEEU, where right now got a text message from Pat in Moton with a picture on it. And he says that the picture that he sent me, he tried posting it to Facebook, and he says they ended up removing it. And he said he posted it again and was suspended from Facebook for a week after reposting it. And here's what the picture is. It's a picture of one of those ear loop masks. And it says, it has a warning sign on the box that says, this product is an ear loop mask. This product is not a respirator and will not provide any protection against COVID-19, coronavirus, or other viruses or contaminants. Wearing an ear loop mask does not reduce the risk of contracting any disease or infection. User is solely responsible for the selection of appropriate personal protective equipment for the setting and application. And of course, Facebook decided to take that post down. And then they put Pat in the no-no zone for a week. How dare they do that? Yeah, so I guess the censorship continues on social media today. Unbelievable. Pat, thank you for sharing that with us. I appreciate that. We're going to take a break for news, but we'll be back in just a bit with hour number three of this Monday edition of Feedback. You're on Air Town Square on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, and I thank you so much for making us part of your day today. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a bit.
The Voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on Air Town Square here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. And our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. Our text line is 484-650-3373, and the email address is feedback at 830weeu.com. All right, with that said, let's start off this last hour of today's show, going back to the phones and speaking with Ardell in Ondolani Township. Ardell, good morning. Welcome to Feedback today.
Oh, good morning, Bill. It's a dreary day.
It is a dreary day, isn't it?
Yes. Never say save it for a dreary day or something, a rainy day. But I don't have any energy in a rainy day.
I hear you there.
Yeah, you get more energy and stuff when you do stuff and it's sunny out. Well, anyway, oh, this goes back maybe to the early 50s. I still kind of remember it. I was in school, but there was a male, you know, born a male, and he went to one of the countries, I don't know, it was a European country, to have the operation and different stuff. And when he became a female, the name was Christine Jorgensen. Now, did you ever hear of that?
Oh, yes, yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, you didn't even hear about that years ago. Now, what I don't understand is, do they actually have everything removed, you know, all their sexual genitalia, do they have them removed? Or you were saying about going into these women's dressing rooms and stuff.
Yeah, it depends on what stage they're in their transformation from male to female.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the beginning of the process, then you're going to, they're still going to have their male parts.
Yeah.
And yet what the schools and what the Biden administration is all in favor of, and even Miguel Cardona, the Secretary of Education, is all in favor of, is allowing transgenders, even in those early stages, to be able to share a locker room with female athletes. And that, to me, isn't right.
See, I never knew. I was talking to my sister about this. What's her name? Her. Yeah. The runner. The racer.
And the story that I shared with you?
Yes.
Let's see. Let me go back here and get that in front of me. It was Sadie Schreiner.
Yeah, Schreiner. Well, I didn't see it on TV. I don't have TV or watch it. But I heard her talking on the radio. I said, my God, that's a male. That's not a female. You mean their voices stay the same?
Again, it depends on whether the process took place prior to puberty or after puberty. Now, I'm not an expert on transgender, so I'm assuming that would be the answer, is that it depends on when the process took place and what stage they're in their transformation.
Oh, I see, because I said to my sister, I said, I think that was a male. She said, no, she's just tall or something. Now, you just verified that she was a transgender. I have to tell her that. Yeah, but, I don't know. That's not. Well, just take, what's his name, Bruce Jenner?
Yes.
I saw him on the news, he's a news reporter or something, some TV show. Oh, big shoulders and all. He doesn't even look like a female.
Yeah, now I can understand. Now I can understand the position that these individuals have, that they never felt comfortable being the gender they were born in, and that they felt more comfortable in the opposite sex. I can understand that, and that for many this a medical procedure is a way to help them mentally, because it can be mentally stressing or a mental stressor to someone who doesn't feel comfortable being the sex that they were born at.
That is a shame, yes. And, you know, there were different names going around for guys that were, in school and all that, were kind of, you know, like sissified or something. That's what they used to call it. They call them queer and, you know, and all those words. Yeah, okay. I remember that. But what did my sister say? Oh, she was kidding, though. She says, yes, yeah, I would have liked to be born a male. She says, at least once a month. You know what I mean?
I'm not following you, Ardell.
My sister said she was kidding. She said, yes, sometimes she said she wished she would have been born a male at the time, once a month, if you know what I mean.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, but this is a serious issue, though.
I know.
And I can understand. I can understand the medical necessity for people who are going through this. But there are other issues here involved that we really need to address. And I personally don't agree with the president's stand on this, especially when you're dealing with Title IX and the rights that was supposed to give to people who were born as women. They have just as much rights, and yet those rights are being taken away now with the revision of Title IX to include transgenders. And it's just not fair.
Well, you know, I'm a senior citizen. I'm probably older than you are. But it's a different world. I'm telling you, from when I was growing up, sometimes I wish, I'm just glad I grew up, in other words, when I did.
Well, it can't be that different when you were talking about Christian Jordan.
I'm surprised.
Because, I mean, that was going on even back then, too.
But you never heard of that before. That's what I'm saying. That was such, they were making jokes about it and everything. I remember.
All right. All right, well,
okay.
Ardell, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
I got a text message from John in Wyomissing in reference to my comment that I said that electric rates are going up, and he sent me a link to an email or to an article in Penn Live that showed, and I saw other articles as well, that PPL is dropping its prices by 9% starting on June 1st. Assuming that the PUC approves that. So I went back and I looked at the history of PPL's rate increases and rate decreases. Going back, and this is directly from the company itself, going back to December 1st of 2020 to May 31st of 2021, and see if you see the pattern here that I saw. So for that period of December 1st of 2020 to May 31st of 2021, PPL had a rate hike of 9.59%. From June 1st of 2021 to November 30th of 2021, they had another rate hike of 13.19%. These are residential rates, by the way. December 1st of 2021 to December 31st of 2021, another rate hike, 36.39%. Then for the period of January 1st, 2022 to May 31st of 2022, they had a rate decrease of 5.93%. So here you had three rather substantial rate increases before you had a rate decrease. Now we've got June 1st of 2022 to November 30th of 2022. We've got a rate increase again for PPL for their residential rates of 20.88%. From December 1st of 2022 to May 31st of last year, another rate increase, sizable increase, of 26.13%. Then on June 1st of for the period June 1st, 2023, to November 30th of 2023, you've got a rate decrease after two substantial increases. This one is a decrease of 20.76%. Then from December 1st of 2023 to May 31st of this year, another decrease of 2.59%. So what I'm seeing here is a pattern of several huge increases followed by at least one decrease. So we might be in that cycle here as well, John. That's what I'm getting at, where they're giving, what was it, a 9% decrease in the next phase from June 1st to whenever. I didn't get a chance to really click on the article that you sent me. Again, it would be in line with this pattern that I'm seeing here of their rate, sizable rate increases followed by a small rate decrease. Who knows? But for PECO, I can tell you their rates are going up because that's the area that or that's the provider that that I have. And let's see, what did we see here from the internet, what PECO is requesting here. What did I do with it here? PECO, here we go. Wouldn't you know it, the minute I need it, it's not going to click on that. Oh, I love the internet, I really do. Sometimes it gives me answers, other times it gives me headaches. All right. No. 12.3%. Starting on January 1st, 2025, a proposed adjustment to PECO's monthly delivery rate would increase residential customers' electric bills by 12.3%. Wow. Yeah. PECO is expensive. I will say that. Let's see. Well, let me do, I'll also look at some others, some other utilities too, to see what their rates are. But by and large, I think what you're going to find over the next couple of years is that those rate decreases are going to decrease themselves in number, especially when they have to fork out the money to improve their transmission lines in order to accommodate the larger volume of electric needs if more people go out and buy EVs, let alone all the other electric appliances that people would have to get if they decide to do away with gas stoves. Now, yes, I know the Biden administration has backed off on its gas stove ban, but local governments haven't. Local governments who are issuing building permits now are requiring that new construction does not include gas stoves. That's at the local level. So the Biden administration can say, no, we're not banning electric stoves. But what they're not saying is that at the local level, they are. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back with more feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Barnesville, Schuylkill Haven, Tremont, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. During that commercial break, I did a little more research. We've got the PPL rate decrease that that John in Wyomissing sent me by way of text. And John, thank you for sending that. But I also indicated that there might be a pattern there of several huge rate increases followed by a smaller rate decrease. That might be the case here. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying it might be. MedEd, on the other hand, is seeking a 9.2% increase, and PECO got a 6% increase, based on what I'm seeing here, that started on March 1st of this year. And then I told you that that what they're seeking for 2025 is over 12% increase. So it's just the beginning. I'm not making this stuff up. You're going to see your electric bills going up thanks to this green energy movement that's underway here. So take my word for it. You're going to see your bills going up in the not-too-distant future. Speaking of which, let's talk to Irene in Burnville about electric rates. Good morning, Irene. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning. While I was on hold, I was looking. At first, I looked at MedEd, but then I looked at PPL. It said the original settlement signed in November includes a PPL agreement to absorb more than $16 million in additional costs related to rectifying their billing issues. $2.3 million voluntarily waived fees issue approximately $7.8 million of additional bad debt expenses arising out of the voluntary. I guess that's part of the reason why the rate's going down, to settle a lawsuit.
Ah, interesting.
But the main reason was with First Energy or MedEd.
Mm-hmm.
That got, the PUC is looking into it.
Okay.
And it's getting postponed at least to January.
Oh, that's good to hear.
And PECO, I couldn't find anything that they're doing anything with.
Yeah, what I saw here is that they were seeking a 6% increase that went into effect on March 1st. And was effective through May 31st of this year.
But, you know, that probably explains PPL and MedEd. It sounds like it's getting postponed.
Okay.
And that's on the PUC website.
And the increase for PPL, you think, is the result of a lawsuit that was filed against them?
That's the way it reads.
And you're reading what, directly from a letter you got from PPL?
No. It's
where did you get that? Is that off the internet?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just a general, according to the proposed joint statement, 48,000 PPL accounts received bills during one or more months between December 2022 and April 2023 billing periods, and they were there was an issue with them. It's a few different places that's coming up with the same thing.
Okay.
But the MedEd, you know, because I thought I heard it, but it didn't really say the electric company that was being postponed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was MedEd then. So that's going to at least January next year.
Well, it's a temporary good news for MedEd customers.
Yep. So what you going to do? And then you see some of these ads pop up on Facebook saying, well, electric cars are going to save you electricity. Trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, right.
And some of the people's comments, they're trying to, too, figure it out also.
Oh, man. All right, Irene, thanks for the call today. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, take care. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Shillington and speak with Matt. What's wrong with my phone here today? There we go. Matt in Shillington, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning to you, Bill. When I heard that interview with the chair of Council of Economic Advisors, I actually thought, Bill, I was listening to a Saturday Night Live skit. I mean, Bill, that man hasn't even learned the Washington skill of winging it. I'm sure you know what I mean by
yes,
winging it.
Right.
What you do is you give a response which sounds like you're answering the question when you really are not. I used to see this when I would give students an essay question, Bill, and I would ask them a question about topic A. There was always a student who didn't have a clue about topic A, but was pretty knowledgeable in topic B. So guess what the student did? He wrote his essay about topic B, including enough references to topic A, and see if I would buy it. Most times I did not buy it, so he didn't even have that skill. I got to tell you, Bill, that would now be, he's not qualified for the job, which is now another reason why I voted for Nikki Haley in the Pennsylvania Republican primary a few weeks ago. A Biden-Haley race, in my view, would be a solid win for Haley. Unfortunately, because we know the name of Biden's presumed opponent, this race is going to go down to the wire, and it will be decided in those seven battleground states. And I liked your discussion with receipts, Bill. I must tell you, I'm a stickler for that. The only time I don't, ask for a receipt is when I give a check for a copay at the doctor's office. What happens is they said, do you want a receipt? And I simply say, no, my canceled check will be my receipt. I deposited a check at the ATM. I want the receipt just in case my monthly statement doesn't show any deposit. Or when I purchase gas bill, I want a receipt in case the price on my monthly credit card bill is different than the price on the receipt. So I still think it's very important that receipts themselves. As far as cell phones in school, I got to admit, when I retired in 2005, there were no smartphones, only flip phones. But our school policy, and Bill, I do agree, I think you had a good piece there, the Pennsylvania School Board Association, you heard them say they think that should be a local decision.
Right.
And I had no problem, you know, with that as opposed to some state law. But at our school, back in 2005, they only had flip phones. Students could have them in case of emergencies. However, they had to be silenced. And if a teacher heard a phone ringing, the student was sent to the office, and I believe the office held that phone for the rest of the day. With smartphones, it is a different world, Bill. I can only give you my thoughts because it doesn't apply to me. But I will say this. I read something where not only can, you know, students have a phone, there are certain times that many schools will allow them to use the phone, specifically during lunchtime, before or after school when they're still on school property, or what we used to call study hall. When you get a little bit of a break, students at many schools are allowed to use the phones then. And just for me, Bill, I don't have a problem with that because I went back to 1970 where our principal, Bill, introduced something called talk study. Imagine, we expect our students to be quiet in class during six periods of a day. They go to study hall, and you expect them to be silent for the entire day. We had something, Bill, students had a choice. Go to the cafeteria, monitored by teachers, but you could do homework, talk with your friends, this or that. If you wanted quiet, you could go to the library. So I would offer this, Bill. I wouldn't see a problem with, on specific circumstances when it's their free time, you know, to allow that to go on. And I have read the thing about how learning is affected, you know, by all of this use of social media. I would still think that's probably more of a danger from 3 o'clock to 7 in the morning or so, too. So I just wanted to share. It's a good topic for you to bring up. I have no problem with a school allowing it, but only under specific circumstances, never during class.
All right, okay? Matt. Thank you. Appreciate your weighing in. Bye-bye now. Let's go to, my phone is not working all that well here today. Let's go to Redding and talk with Ducky. Ducky, good morning.
Good morning. I've listened to you talking about the electric bills, and I just want to put a warning out to the people. Just Friday, I got a phone call, and they said they were from MedEd, and that I did not file for my rebate. And they told me this was on my answering machine. They wanted me to call a phone number. Well, I never called back, but MedEd is not offering any rebates. And I just wanted people to be aware of this, that they don't give it the wrong information on.
Wow. Did you contact the company at all?
No, I didn't. Maybe I should have done that. I didn't even think of that, really.
And how do you know that they're not offering a rebate?
I checked the phone number.
Okay.
The phone number wasn't MedEd's phone
number.
Was not
MedEd? Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I never made the phone call.
Okay.
But, you know, all the rates are going up. They're going to give a rebate, I don't think, anyhow. But,
just a phone number doesn't necessarily indicate that they're not, because that could have been a marketing firm that they're using to reach out to people.
Too, but I'm just, like I say, I never called the number because I know what MedEd's phone number is because I keep it on my phone in case, the power goes down.
No, I understand. Yeah. I understand. All right, Ducky. Well, thanks for sharing that with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye now. And we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more of Feedback on this Monday morning in just a bit. Stay with us.
serving Tamaqua, Pottsville, Pine Grove, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
Welcome back to the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU and feedback. You're on Air Town Square, 610-374-8800, toll free, 888-401-0459 are the numbers. Pat Moten sent me another text message clarifying his earlier text because he had, the way it was worded, it sounded like it was a post to Facebook. Just to refresh your memory if you weren't listening, he sent me a photo of a warning message that was attached to a box of ear loop masks saying that they will not protect you from COVID-19. And the way his first text was worded, it sounded like it was him trying to post that to Facebook recently, and that Facebook first removed it, and then when he tried it again, he was put in no-no land for Facebook, the way I like to call it, for a week, I guess, Pat. But anyway, he wrote back and said, just a clarification, the suspension was during COVID, not a post that he recently put on Facebook. So, Pat, thank you for writing in and clarifying that for me. Henry Cuellar, a congressman from Texas, is in trouble, obviously. On Friday, he and his wife were in court where they heard that they were charged over claims they took $600,000 in bribes from an Azerbaijani oil and gas company and a Mexican bank between 2014 and 2021. Well, now comes word that a couple of lawmakers are wanting him to resign from Congress. And whether Cuellar decides to stay or go, Democrats will almost certainly be stuck with him on the ballot for the November election, reports the New York Post, meaning that the charges could potentially help Republicans keep control of the House in the November 2024 elections. The Cuellars were hit with multiple counts of bribery, wire fraud, and money laundering for allegedly accepting bribes through shell companies owned by Imelda, who is Henry Cuellar's wife. The charges carry a maximum penalty of up to 204 years in federal prison. Two Republicans, along with Democratic Representative Dean Phillips, are calling for Cuellar to leave Congress immediately. But House Democratic leadership, according to the New York Post, is standing by Cuellar, a nine-term incumbent in a border district that has been roiled by the migrant crisis. Here's what House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries had to say about Cuellar. Henry Cuellar has admirably devoted his career to public service and is a valued member of the House Democratic Caucus. Like any American, Jeffries went on to say, Congressman Cuellar is entitled to his day in court and the presumption of innocence throughout the legal process. Cuellar won re-election easily in 2022, but his one solid Democratic district has been trending Republican in recent years, according to the Post, and a flip of his seat could keep the House in GOP hands. Cuellar is vying for his 10th term this November after winning an uncontested Democratic Party primary back in March. So we'll have to keep tabs on that and see where that stands. But I find it interesting that the Democratic leadership in the House says he should stay, that he shouldn't step down. What message does that send? What message does that send to the public? Granted, he hasn't been found guilty. Charges have only been filed at this point. But still, as one who represents Congress, shouldn't we be looking up to our congresspeople rather than looking down at them? And in this case, to me, given the message that sends, he should step aside. And I'd love to hear from you on this one, what you think. 610-374-8800, toll free, 888-401-0459. And let's go to the phones. In fact, let's head to Delaware County and Swarthmore in particular and speak with Alex. Alex, good morning.
Bill, you're at the top of your game as usual.
No, I'm not. It's a Monday, and I'm dead tired, buddy.
Well, I'll tell you, I when I miss a show, I really miss it, and that's a good thing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Did you see over the weekend, I was kind of surprised to see it described this way, but the terror alert for the United States is at the highest level it's ever been in history. It's at what they call catastrophic.
Yeah, the FBI director was on Capitol Hill just a few weeks ago talking about that, and there was it was met with a whimper at most out of the media.
Met with a whimper. I never heard anything about it again. And my thinking was, I was speaking out loud to my wife. I said, wonder what part this plays in the election, or what do they have up their sleeve? And she goes, there you go again, always some kind of thing, you know, going on. I said, well, would you have believed 2 years before the pandemic what was about to transpire?
Hmm.
Or whatever the kind of thing goes on, you say to yourself, oh, my God, you know, you can't even imagine it happening. But all I'm saying is I don't know what's going on, but I haven't heard anything more about it, and they're keeping it quiet. And so maybe in the next, because you do your due diligence so well, maybe you can come up with some investigative reporting, because that's really that's your key strong point.
Well, I find it interesting that we've got the FBI director out there, and he's been saying this for a while now about the increased terror risk. And we talked about it on this show several times, what he had to say. And you would think that he'd be taken seriously. And if he is, the lawmakers down there in Washington aren't showing any signs that they're taking him seriously. And then there's the president who thinks that the border is secure. We don't have any problems. And now he wants to. I heard last week that Mr. Biden is considering bringing Palestinians over here.
Oh, lovely!
And not vetting them in advance. So who's to say that that members of Hamas wouldn't be among them?
Well, I mean, you have to assume that you know, they always say expect. I hope for the best, but you know, like expect the worst. And you just never know what people are thinking or what's up their sleeve. But the thing is, in this day and age, you would think that that would be the furthest thing you want to do is, because, again, many of these people have are hell-bent on bringing us great consternation in this country. Now, all I can say in closing is, in this day and age, where anything can transpire at any moment, stay close to home. Don't plan trips far away. I'm staying out of places going farther than, let's say, 45 minutes from my home. I want to be close by that in case the unexpected were to happen, I could get back home without a problem. And I'm saying for those that do travel on a regular basis, try to at least think about what would happen if, you know, you needed to get home quickly.
Yeah, you know, and what I find interesting is that all the lawmakers, and of course Mr. Biden as well, all of them lived through 9/11, and you would think that they would at least have some concern about the potential for higher risk of terrorism in this country.
No one knows, again, like you would have never believed if someone told you in 2018 about the pandemic and that crazy, it's almost like, was that a dream? What we went through, it's almost like you have to pinch yourself and say, I can't believe. And you know what? The funny thing is, I got through the whole thing without a sniffle, and I'm 72.
How about that?
And I rarely wore a mask. And so I really never believed anything about it. I always thought that it was some kind of politically motivated thing. But people died from it. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
People died from it. But it seemed like, I don't know. It's like either hit or miss. There's still a lot of things unknown that we don't know about it. But, hey, listen, keep up the good work and look into that terror thing, because you are great at uncovering this kind of stuff.
Well, I read what others are, what other reporters come up with. That's not me as an investigative reporter. But we'll see what we can uncover in the coming weeks.
Well, be well, Bill.
Alex, thank you, buddy. Appreciated the call.
Take care.
Bye-bye now. Let's go to Everett. Andrew wants to weigh in on a couple of the issues we've talked about today. Andrew, good morning. Whoops. I don't know if it's me hitting this phone wrong or what. But Andrew, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning, Bill. Love your show. Awesome show. Great. Best show in the whole state, in my opinion.
Oh, you're too kind, but thank you.
Well, hey, I wanted to talk about Tale of Two Congressmen. What's the guy's name? Cellulos or whatever?
Cuellar? Henry Cuellar?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Cuellar, yeah, in Texas. And also, remember the guy, Congressman George Santos of Long Island?
Well, not remember how it was, George, yes, uh-huh. And then
it was the serious of the charge, you know, like, oh, we can't wait for a trial. We got to get him out of there, you know.
Oh, it's so true.
Yeah, so there's the ultimate hypocrisy, obviously, because, you know, ultimately the guy had a D next to his name. And, you know, he can commit bloody murder and, you know, they'll still support him. But my theory is he didn't pay 10% to the big guy, because this sounds so similar, you know, getting bribes from overseas oil and gas companies. Does this remind you of somebody in the news the last couple of years?
Well, at least somebody's son.
Yeah, somebody said, well, you know what I mean? It's basically Hunter Biden, you know, like, you know, he thought ahead and gave 10% to the big guy, you know, hence he's like scot-free, whereas this guy's getting, you know, charges. I don't know. But hey, I just wanted to, you know, mention, you know, about just ultimately the hypocrisy. And there was another story on that. I was surprised this did not get a lot of controversy or never. You may have some insight on this, being in the radio business for a long time, but it was about who Joe Biden gave an interview with. Howard Stern, last week.
Yeah, and Howard Stern is getting feedback on that, saying that he really missed some opportunities there with asking questions of Biden.
Well, my point is, can you imagine this years ago, someone were to say a sitting president of the United States would go on as a guest on the Howard Stern show?
Hey, you know, what can I tell you? We're talking about a man who, up till now, was only willing to go on with late-night talk show hosts.
Well, yeah, but talk shows are one thing, but the Howard Stern show, I mean, that's just like, you know, I mean, was he on there with Baba Booey?
A lot of politicians have been on Howard's show.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, I think it's just kind of, personally, I think it's kind of degrades the office. I mean, if there's any respect in the office to begin with, but just, I don't know. I mean, Howard Stern has this very crass and gross reputation, and, you know, it's just. I don't think a president, there should be a certain level of decorum and dignity to the president of the United States. And just going on the Howard Stern, I don't know, maybe the show changed over the last few years, but you tell most Americans, oh, president of the United States is going on the Howard Stern show. It's just like, you know, I mean, how often does he meet with veterans groups, but then how often does he go on the Howard Stern show, you know? So.
Yeah, I really would like to see, between now and November, the president make at least one appearance before a bona fide reporter who will ask tough questions of him, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, it's funny because a couple months ago, Tucker Carlson, he gave a two-hour interview with Vladimir Putin, and I was sitting there watching this. I was like, my gosh, can our president like sit down and actually answer questions uninterrupted for 2 hours?
You know? Wow.
So, forget the content, just even physically, mentally capable of answering the questions. But, you know, when he was on there, you know, with Howard Stern, I thought to myself, I wish he was with Lake and Riley's parents instead.
Mm. Do you think, speaking of questions, Biden came out the other day and said that he's willing to debate Donald Trump. Andrew, do you think it's going to happen? Do you think there are going to be debates between President Biden and former President Trump?
Probably not. And even if there are, he's going to get the questions ahead of time. That's happened before.
And if there are no debates, do you think that voters would be cheated, or do you think that it's no big deal?
Well, I'd love to see the debates, but it's not going to happen, because the debate would only help President Trump, and ultimately it could hurt Biden. Is he'd have one of his Biden moments, and that's why, you know, politicians tend to like to hide him, you know, and his handlers don't have, it's not a controlled setting, you know, for his handlers, but I don't know. I'd love to see it, but I just personally don't think it's going to happen.
Andrew, thank you for calling in today. I appreciate it.
Yep, no problem.
All right, bye-bye now. And we'll be back with the final moments of feedback on this Monday in just a bit. Stay with us.
that matter to me.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
And that does it for us. I want to thank everybody who called in, wrote in, or what have you, sharing your opinions of the topics of the day. You folks are the stars of the show. And we'll do it again tomorrow for sure. I want to thank my producer, Sean Tansky. Thank you, buddy.
No problem, Bill.
And I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, you will.
Absolutely. Until tomorrow, make it a great rest of your day today, okay? That'll do it for this episode of Feedback. To comment on the show, you can email us at feedback@830weeu.com. You can also hear our show live from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time at 830weeu.com or on the TuneIn app. For producer Sean Tansky, I'm Bill Saunders. Thanks for listening.